it. Must have been a male. Yeah.
Oh, there's a rabbi.
Oh, good. Okay.
Hello.
Hi, Rabbi.
How are you? Broadcasting live from Adamstown, Maryland.
Are you still commuting every day?
I am.
Oh, wow.
As long as the yeshiva's here, that's where I'll be commuting to. But yeah.
Were you able to get vaccinated?
I got my first shot 2 weeks ago. I'm going Monday for my second one, Ritz Hashem. Yeah.
Oh, good.
As an educator, and I had to go to Prince George's County. I got in that window when PG County was still doing.
Oh, like, yeah. Before they kicked you out. Yes.
Yeah, so I got in that window. So Baruch Hashem, that worked out. I mean, I feel bad. Montgomery County is lagging so far behind everyone else. But
yeah.
Anybody else get their shots yet?
Yeah, I got one.
You got one. Okay, good.
Yeah. I'm old because that's why.
Yeah, you're on the road.
Yeah. I got my second one a month ago.
But Israel, yeah, you guys are best us.
Yeah, you're way better off than us.
Yes, that's for sure.
I'm able to hug my grandchildren now.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Hopefully it'll be done there quicker than anywhere else. You know?
Yeah. Well, Israel, I read that Israel is now vaccinating 16-year-olds.
Right, yeah, they've moved all the way down the line. They're almost at the full population, which is great. I mean, I guess they have a more centralized health system. It's a smaller population, a little more dense communities, so it's easier to get to everybody, but still.
And also, geographically, there's a lot less territory to cover.
Right. But Montgomery County, we still know, is lagging behind for whatever reason it is. So,
yeah.
Those of us in Montgomery County, we have to deal with that.
That's because it's run by Democrats.
I don't see where it says on here how many people are in the meeting.
Okay, let's go ahead and mute everybody right now. If you have any questions, feel free to unmute or raise your hand or any of the other Zoom techniques to chime in. Okay, so we're going to continue with the story of Yosef. And last time we left off the story, Yosef was thrown into jail. He was blamed, accused by Potiphar's wife.
Hello, Rabbi Sher, how are you?
Hi, Tzvi. Thank you. He was accused by Potiphar's wife in order that of acting inappropriately. Potiphar, as we learned last time, didn't really believe his wife, but in terms of trying to pay some lip service to her request, threw him into jail. And Yosef now is found in jail. So if we were to go to, let's find the right page here, page 217, Mistun Chumash, Perek Mem, chapter 40, in the book of Bereshis. So last time we spoke about the very last few verses of chapter 39, which finds Yosef in prison. And just as Yosef rose to the top in Potiphar's house, he quickly rises to the top of prison as well. He's looked at as the most trustworthy prisoner. He had a chain, he had a certain charm, which everybody recognized. They could tell that God was with him, and he became in charge of the prison. If you look at verse 23, the prison warden did not scrutinize anything that was in his charge, inasmuch as Hashem was with him. And whatever he did, Hashem made successful. So Yosef, in prison once again, he rises to the top. And everyone can see this is a godly person. This is somebody who has divine assistance. Now, it's an amazing thing, because Yosef, in a certain sense, is at a low. I mean, imagine, just a little while back, he was a son of Yaakov, headed for royalty, one of the 12 tribes, respected by all, in a prominent, wealthy, honored family. He's then sold as a slave, and in his master's house, he rises to power and to responsibility. He's accused, even though he goes through a very difficult moral an ethical dilemma, he perseveres, he doesn't give in to his desire and does not commit adultery, but even so, he gets thrown into jail. So, and you can imagine that, you know, as bad as jail is nowadays, picture an ancient Egyptian dungeon, that's where Yosef was. Now, jail nowadays, as we know, is not all that bad, you know, as things go. Obviously, no one wants to be in jail, but ultimately, picturing a medieval dungeon is bad enough. And think about ancient Egypt, you can imagine how bad that dungeon was. And Yosef is there. So Yosef has reached a low. He's reached a low in a sense that you can't really go lower than this. You know, from being on top of the world to being in a dungeon for a kid of his age, it was horrible. It was a terrible experience. But yet, Yosef still rose above the rest. I mean, speaking to Yosef's credit, he never despaired. He never became depressed. He never was too down. He didn't sink into depression. He still had this charm, this chaim, this smile on his face. He cared for others. He acted on their behalf. We'll talk about a little bit later. But just to look at this persona of Yosef, who's been through so much, but still maintains his upbeat, positive attitude, it's an amazing thing. So Yosef, again, he has a chain, he has this grace, this charm that everybody recognizes, and he rises to the top within prison. Now let's begin chapter 40, Perek Mem. It says, and it happened after these things that the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and the baker transgressed against their master, against the king of Egypt. So we enter into the famous story of Paro's chief butler and chief baker who end up in prison with Yosef. Now we already mentioned earlier how it was really an incredible stroke of divine providence that Yosef is in the royal prison. But Yosef could have been sold to a regular slave owner, and had he been in prison, it would have been in the general, you know, layperson's prison. Yosef is in Paro's royal dungeon, which may have its disadvantages, but has advantages. I mean, when you're in Paro's royal dungeon, you meet Paro's royal staff, who also get thrown into the dungeon. But you're able to network with people that did have power and could rise to power again once they're freed. So Yosef, again, this is part of Hashem's divine plan, is thrown in the royal prison. And lo and behold, there's two of Paro's royal servants who end up in prison. So what happened was, it's described in Pasuk Aleph, that there was the Hebrew says there was the mashke and the ofe. There was the wine pourer and there was the baker. And if you were to take this pasuk simply, it sounds like it was not the chief butler or the chief baker that made a mistake. It was one of the workers, because it doesn't use the word sar here. It doesn't say the officer or the chief. It just says the baker or the butler, the cupbearer or the baker. So we'll see soon how it switches to talking about the chief butler and chief baker. We'll describe why that is. Now, what did they do wrong? So Rashi tells us, based on the words of the sages, that they found a fly in Paro's cup of wine, and they found a pebble in Paro's bread, Paro's cake. So if you're Paro and there's a pebble in your cake, then that baker's got to go. That's it. And if you're Paro and there's a fly in your wine, then that's it. You know, the wine pourer has to go. So that was the problem. Now the pasuk begins achar dvarim ha'ela, which means after these things, which always indicates there's a progression happening here in the Torah. So what's the progression? So Rashi says something very interesting. Rashi says that Yosef was just involved in a major royal scandal. Potiphar was a member of the royal household. His wife was involved in this scandalous behavior with this Hebrew slave. So what was in the newspapers in Mitzrayim? In the Egyptian times, what was the headline article? So it's going to be, there's a scandal in Paro's household. This Hebrew slave, you know, accosted Potiphar's wife, and there may have been some immoral activity, and that was all over the papers. So poor Yosef, you know, this righteous, poor Yosef, he's getting all this terrible PR, this embarrassing reputation. So Rashi says, immediately after, another scandal occurred with Paro's baker and Paro's butler, and that took place, that took the place of Yosef in the headlines, as it were. So now the headlines the next day read, you know, Paro's baker tossed into prison, you know, pebble found in the cake, you know, and then there's another royal scandal. So just like it is nowadays, you know, the scandals keep on coming and headlines change. It's the same thing back then, 3,000 years ago, same idea. So Rashi says that Hashem was doing a kindness to Yosef in having this scandal occur with the butler and the baker in proximity to Yosef's scandal. So Yosef would be off the minds of the Egyptians. That embarrassment could be put aside. And they'll focus on a new royal scandal, being the scandal of the butler and the baker. Interesting thing. So let's look at verse 2. It says that Paro got angry. Paro was enraged at his two courtiers, two servants, the chamberlain of the cupbearers and the chamberlain of the bakers, and he placed them in the ward of the house of the chamberlain of the butchers, into the prison, the place where Yosef was confined. So now if you notice, we change to describing them not as the baker and as the cupbearer, but as the chief baker, the chamberlain, and the chief cupbearer. So why now is the pasuk focusing on the fact that they are the sar hamashgim, or the sar ofim, as opposed to verse 1, pasuk aleph, that is called them the baker and the butler? So there's two approaches to this. One approach is that when a regular baker makes a mistake, who's responsible? The head baker is. When the regular cupbearer makes a mistake, who's responsible? The head butler is. So one approach is that they themselves were not the ones who actually did anything wrong, but being that they have the responsibility over all the employees, they're held accountable. That's one way to see it. Some say no, it was actually the chief butler baker that made the errors. And just the, why I left out the word in the first pasuk, I don't know. But some say they themselves made the errors. But it's interesting to note there are two approaches here. Did these guys actually make the mistakes? Or was it their employees and they're just held accountable for the employees' actions? So either way could go. If you look at, but then it says they're placed in the prison with Yosef. So in verse 4, the chamberlain of the butchers, who was the head of the prison, appointed Yosef to be with them, and he attended them, and they remained in the ward for a period of days. So just if you remember before, the chief butcher was actually Potiphar, and Potiphar was in charge of the prison. Now, some say he was actually the chief executioner, which would make a lot of sense why he ran the prison. Some say he was the chief butcher, but he's also in charge of the prison. But either way, we see here that he was the one who Yosef allegedly had assaulted his wife, but yet he's the one appointing Yosef to positions of power. This is another indication that Potiphar didn't believe his wife. He knew his wife was always up to no good, and he saw Yosef for who he was, as a honest, upstanding, charming, moral young slave. And therefore, even though he could have killed him, if he believed his wife, he wouldn't have given him any honor. But yet he still gave Yosef a lot of responsibility because, again, we don't think he actually believed his wife. That's what we see over here. Now, verse 5. The two of them dreamt a dream. Each one had a dream on the same night. Each one according to the interpretation of his dream, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt who were confined in the prison. So now we get to the famous dreams of the butler and the baker. Now Yosef's there in prison with them. And Yosef seems to be tending to them in some way. But then the Tziv says, it wasn't that Yosef was actually ordered to tend to the butler and the baker. He says, but it's a mita of a Jew. It's a natural Jewish trait to subordinate ourselves to royalty and recognize their needs and help them. I mean, Yosef was not serving these two men because he was forced to by the chief of the jail, by the prison warden. He was serving them because Jews recognized that they should respect royalty, and it could be deep down he knew he could get something out of them. It could be there was some ulterior motive here, that if I become close, the chief butler and chief baker, it may come back to help me one day. So Yosef had that, was astute in that way, and he had the mita of subordinating himself to royalty, and he also had this wisdom, he was clever, and he understood if I can endear myself to these two people, it might make a difference. Now in verse 6, Yosef came to them in the morning. He saw them, and behold, they were aggrieved. They're upset. They're concerned. So this is a regular day in jail, in the dungeon. Yosef wakes up in the morning and sees these two people who look a little bit, different than usual. They're concerned. They're a little disconcerted. They're a little off. They don't look good. They don't look happy. They look down. Now, like you can imagine, if you're living in the Egyptian dungeon, you probably often don't wake up looking so good. That's just my assumption. I can't imagine it was a very pleasant place to be. I can't imagine breakfast there was all that great and the beds were so comfortable and there probably had plenty of bugs around. So seeing two men looking down, I can't imagine was out of the ordinary. But Yosef saw them that they were down. They were out. Something was wrong. Now, why were they so upset? Because their dreams troubled them. Now, we spoke about dreams earlier on. We know the story of Yosef is full of stories of dreams. Yosef's whole journey began with his dreams. And we spoke about how dreams have within them, according to the Gemara, a sense of prophecy. The dreams, the Gemara says, are 1/60th of Nevuah, of prophecy. And therefore, dreams can mean a lot. Now, we did describe earlier on, there are different types of dreams. Now, if you dream about things that you do during the day, that's probably just your imagination thinking about your daily activities. when you have dreams that are kind of out of the ordinary, different, there's actually a sense that you're having some level of prophecy. So these two royal servants who had these dreams, which for them were kind of out of the ordinary, they weren't dreaming about things that were typical for them. So they felt there was something maybe prophetic in these dreams, and it troubled them, and they were down about it. So Yosef in verse 7 comes to them, and he asked Paro's courtiers who were with him in the ward of his master's house, saying, "Why do you appear downcast today?" So in the Hebrew, "Madua pnechem ra'im hayom," why is your face so off? Why do you look so sad? What's wrong with you? How can I help you? So this line that Yosef is saying is actually such a powerful line. They were nervous, they were down, they were out, but Yosef noticed something. And Yosef, even when he was in prison, even in a state where he could have been himself down and depressed and disinterested in other human beings, he reached out to them and he said to them, like, "How are you feeling? What's wrong?" With care and kindness in his voice. I want to read to you, one of these books I like quoting periodically, Rabbi Feldman's book, Biblical Questions, Spiritual Journeys. It talks about different questions you find in Chumash when you see people asking questions that don't seem to be so significant to the story. So he has a whole chapter on this question. He calls it the caring man in the dungeon. And the question is, why do you look so sad today? And just to read you a little bit of the context here. Yosef came in the morning and looked upon them, and they were sad. Yosef himself is a prisoner, and he has been elevated to the position of overseer of the other prisoners. He's in charge of the jail, as we said before. Yosef himself, like we said, could have despaired on his situation. He could have given up on humanity. He could have said, "Look what happened to me. I'm a good person. I'm a kind, caring person. I'm a moral person. I believe in God. I have morals. I have dreams and desires. And look where I am now. My brother sold me. My master threw me into jail. Here I am languishing in an Egyptian dungeon." And you could at that point sort of disconnect from others, not care about any other human beings, sort of sink into your own self, pity, and ignore others' feelings. Additionally, Yosef was in charge of the jail. He could have let his arrogance overtake him and said, "What do I care about these people? I'm in charge over here." He could have lorded himself over the other prisoners. But instead of lording it over them, he looks upon them as fellow human beings. Yosef sees these people are human beings. He takes note of them, and he sees that the butler and the baker are out of sorts, even more than normal. Meaning in a dungeon, everyone's out of sorts, but they're more out of sorts than normal for the inhabitants of a dungeon. There was something that looked totally off about them. So the sequence of events is very important, because Yosef sees them, they're unhappy, and then he makes his inquiry. And this question that Yosef asks is actually, it's a life-changing question. Why is that? Because had he ignored these two prisoners, then based on the chain of events, Yosef may have remained there in jail forever. I mean, how does Yosef actually get out of prison eventually? The chief butler is freed. He goes up to Paro. He puts in a good word to Paro about Yosef. And then Paro brings Yosef out from prison. Why did that begin? That's because Yosef interpreted the butler's dreams. And had he not had this interaction, again, in terms of the chain of natural events, there's no guarantee that Yosef would have ever made it out of prison. Again, at least as the natural events themselves unfolded, this was the key in changing his fate. So it began by Yosef asking his prisoners, "Why are you so down?" Had he not asked this question, he may have remained in the dungeon, would never have interpreted Pharaoh's dreams, might never have become the powerful viceroy of Egypt, might never have saved the ancient world from famine. But he asked the question, he expressed his concern, and that made all the difference. So Yosef's question is simple of seeing human beings that are suffering and saying, "How can I help you? What is wrong?" It changed the course of his life. It changed the course of events. And again, naturally, based on cause and effect, this is what brought Yosef out of prison up to being the powerful ruler of Mitzrayim, of Egypt. And his question is very specific. It doesn't just say that to them, like, "Good morning, how are you?" No, those types of questions we know are not that meaningful and don't evoke any real response. He said to them, beyond generalities, he noted something specific. He said, "I noticed that you look sad today. Is something troubling you?" So Yosef is teaching us how to show care and concern for others. If somebody is down, if notice them, just saying, who are you, is not really good enough. How are you is not very meaningful. But even to specify to them, like, is there something I can do to help you? Is something bothering you? When you're specific, that shows how much you care, and that brings out the other to share with you their trouble. And so Rabbi Feldman actually says here, very interestingly, he says, we have the question, now Yosef's entire time when he was in Egypt, why did he send a message to his father? Say, hey, dad, I'm here in Egypt. I was sold off by my brothers. Come save me. Why didn't he ever do that? So it could be that Yosef's concern for others' dignity was so deep and so profound, he wasn't willing to embarrass his brothers. I mean, we see Yosef's care for other human beings. Had Yosef sent the letter to his father, I'm here in Egypt, the story would have gotten out to their father, and the brothers would have been terribly ashamed. So Yosef, despite his own personal suffering, was not willing to do anything to harm a fellow human being. To send this letter to his father would have then embarrassed his brothers. He wasn't willing to do that. So we see this all from his own. He has such a sensitivity to others. He didn't ever want to do anything to harm them. And when he saw somebody suffering, he reached out to help them. The whole concept of benam l'chaveru, of interpersonal mitzvos, caring for others, is one big purpose of it is to combat loneliness. Everyone is lonely and in need of attention and care. Naturally, human beings need others to connect with. We need that. Even when you're living amongst others, you could still be lonely. Somebody can be in a community, in a society, in a family, but still feel alone. When do you feel cared for? To take notice of the other, to recognize the other. That combats loneliness. If only the self exists and no other, then life becomes difficult. And there's no existence either for the self or the other. The Torah teaches us that no man is an island unto himself. The Torah's rule instructs us how to create bridges in between the islands and to connect them and to make them as one. So when Yosef says, why do you look so sad today? Yosef, in doing so, changes the course of history. When we concern ourselves with other people, we can also change history for them or for ourselves. I mean, I'm sure we've all read stories. I mean, terrible stories of somebody is on the verge of suicide. And then a neighbor comes over one day and just says hi, you know, brings them over a cookie and changes their life. Everyone's read stories or heard stories like that, you know, how one kind word can do so much for another. So in this, Yosef, through these kind words, he did so much for himself, not even knowingly. But what it really speaks to is it's not about what happens, but it's about Yosef's sensitivity. And again, just trying to describe Yosef's greatness. As low as he has gone, as difficult a situation is, as much as he could have just, you know, retreated into himself and ignored everybody else. Unfortunately, with someone's in depression, they totally focus on themselves and they can't reach out to others. When you're in a good mood and you're happy, you can bring others into your circle. Yosef remained upbeat. He remained positive, he remained caring, even through his big difficulties. And this made such a difference to Yosef and to others around him. So this question of what's wrong led Yosef really to his freedom. You know, the Mishnah teaches us, having mekabel kol adam v'ser pam yofos, you're supposed to greet everybody with a pleasant face. It says in the Gemara that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the great leader of the Jewish people, during the times of the destruction of the temple, it says that nobody ever beat him to saying hello. He'd walk through the streets and he'd be like, hello, 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 hello. Not even a goy in the market would say hello to him first. He'd say hello to everybody. He was always reaching out to others and he was giving them that. And when the Gadol Hador, when this great rabbi smiles at you, so what it does is that it makes you feel so good. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, even the Gentile in the market, Gemara says, would not beat him to saying hello. He'd always say hello first. And he's constantly reaching out to others and showing them that he cared. Had Yosef remained in prison callous or insensitive, it would have been a very different story. But because he showed that care and respect to others, it meant so much. And it keeps everybody around you happy. When you're upbeat and you're caring, everybody's uplifted. When you become, you know, focused on yourself and negative, everybody becomes, you know, negative and down. So our mood makes such a difference. So this to me is such a special story about Yosef. This one question means so much. Let's see the answer. So we asked them, why are you so downcast today? And they said to him, we dreamt the dream, but there's no interpreter for it. So Yosef said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Relate it to me, if you please. So they said, we had dreams. Now our dreams are making us feel very uneasy. So Yosef said, okay, let me hear. No, Hashem will interpret dreams, but let me hear and I'll see if Hashem gives me any insight into this dream. So like we said last week, Yosef's always invoking Hashem's name. Yosef makes sure that everybody knows he's a believer in God. That's something he's not concealed. He's always talking about Hashem. And Yosef says, well, dreams are in Hashem's hands, but let me know about your dream. And let's see if I can interpret it. So I'm not going to read through all the dreams in the text, but let's just get a little summary. The first one to the latest dream is the butler. And the butler says that I was dreaming and there was a grapevine. The grapevine grew out three branches and the blossoms bloomed in the branches and there were grapes that formed. And then I took the grapes, I squeezed them and I served them to Paro. That was his dream. So if you look at verse 12, Yosef says, well, I'll tell you what it means. The three branches are 3 days. And what it means is that in 3 days, Paro is going to recognize you and he'll restore you to your position as the royal cupbearer. You will then serve Paro in his hand as you did before. And you'll be fine. You'll be free. That's what Yosef tells him. But look at verse 14. Yosef throws in here a little bit of his own personal desire or emotion. He says, if only you would think of me with yourself when he benefits you, and you will do me a kindness, if you please, and mention me to Paro, then you would get me out of this building. For indeed, I was kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing for them to put me into the dungeon. So Yosef sees an opportunity here. He says, this guy is going to go back to Paro. So maybe he can put in a good word and get me out of here. There's an opportunity. So we would see this as an act of hashkacha, divine providence. Now, Yosef has met somebody that will go back to the royal palace and give Paro a reason to pardon Yosef because he has a favorable impression of Yosef. So this looks like an opportunity for Yosef. Yosef mentions, I was taken from the land of the Hebrews. Now, that's actually is a strange statement because who are the Hebrews? So the Hebrews, we would assume, are Yaakov's family. So apparently, Rav Hirsch points out that the Egyptians must have already been aware of Yaakov and his family, meaning that they're already so prominent, they're already so well known that even though the land still belonged to the Canaanites, and Yaakov and his family did not yet own any part of Eretz Yisrael, besides those places they bought, but they weren't in control of the land. You can call the land of the Hebrews, and people knew what you were talking about. So this always speaks to the greatness and the fame and recognition of Yaakov and his family. So he called the land of the Hebrews. But he also says, you know, I was kidnapped. His language is, I was kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews. So I've seen pointed out in commentaries, I think this can be taken in either direction. When you say that, when he says he was kidnapped, he doesn't mention he was sold. Meaning that in some way, it could be that it was implying that he's not coming to blame his brothers for what happened. Unclear, because kidnapped can have a lot of implications to it. But he says, I was kidnapped from the land. And then he says again, I've done nothing here to deserve to be in the dungeon. So he's telling the chief butler, I have two reasons why Paro will accept your request if you ask for my pardon. Why? Number one, I'm not really a slave. I was a victim of kidnapping. And number two, the fact that I'm in the dungeon is because I was blamed for something I never did. I'm here, but I'm innocent. So as an innocent person who's not really even meant to be a slave, who was kidnapped, Paro should have mercy upon me and free me. So that was Yosef's, he inserts this into his interpretation for the butler because he sees an opportunity here that maybe this can help me become freed. So the baker's watching this, and the baker says, oh, I see that this is a very good interpretation. It sounds very accurate to me and very positive as well. So he tells him his dream. And again, in short, his dream is that there were three baskets on his head. In the top basket, it was filled with delicacies, you know, the pastries for Paro, and birds came and ate from the top basket. That was the baker's dream. So his interpretation is not quite as pleasant as the interpretation of the butler's dream. If you look at verse 18, Yosef responded and said, this is his interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. In 3 days, Paro will lift your head from you and hang you on a tree. Birds will eat your flesh from you. So not quite as rosy as the butler's interpretation. But that's how we interpreted the baker's dream. And Yosef does not put in any requests for the baker because the baker's not going anywhere that's going to help Yosef. So what happens in verse 20? In verse 20, it says, and it was on the third day, Paro's birthday. They made a feast for all of his servants, and he counted the chamberlain of the cupbearers and the chamberlain of the bakers among his servants. So we see here, Paro is having a birthday party. It's just interesting to note, nothing negative about birthdays, but now the only source that we have in the Torah to mark a birthday is from Paro. And we don't like taking lessons from Paro because Paro was an evil, evil tyrant. So just interesting to note, even though we tend to mark our birthdays, but in Jewish tradition, it seems that it was not always done. And the one source in the Torah marking a birthday is Paro's birthday. It's an interesting fact. But Paro's having a birthday party. At the birthday party, he wants to have, I guess, all of his servants included, and he wants to have all the delicacies he can have. He wants all hands on deck. So then he's thinking through his staff, and he thinks about his baker, thinks about his butler, and he decides, okay, I'm going to reinstate my butler to his position, and I'm going to execute the baker. Now, why did he do that? So very simple. Commentaries explain. Now, what were the crimes of the butler and the baker? There is a fly in the wine, and there was a pebble in the cake. So a fly in the wine is not necessarily due to negligence of the butler. It could be he's walking to the royal throne, and a fly flew in as soon as he gave it to Paro. I mean, it's something that was something he couldn't necessarily prevent. It came from the outside, and it could be it happened just before he served to Paro, and it wasn't really his fault. So Paro recognized that, and he reinstated the butler to his position. Whereas the baker found a pebble in the cake. A pebble in the cake, that was preventable. That means you didn't sift the flour well enough. No, you should have sifted your flour better before serving it to Paro. So that was a result of negligence. It was a preventable thing. And therefore, Paro said, I can't have this guy around. He executed his baker. Now we would say, of course, that's a little extreme, but again, we're talking about an ancient tyrant who couldn't care less about human life. He cared only about himself. So he killed his baker because he found the pebble in the bread and the cake, but he reinstated his butler to the position because he felt that the fly was not necessarily his negligence. It could have flown in from the outside. Let's look at verse 21. It says he restored the chamberlain of the cupbearers to his cupbearing. He placed on Paro's palm. Verse 22, he hanged the chamberlain of the bakers just as Yosef had interpreted to them. So Yosef was correct in his interpretations, and exactly as Yosef described occurred to these two gentlemen. So in verse 23, so Yosef now has hope because Yosef says, I was correct. I asked the butler to remember me and mention me to Paro. So therefore, maybe this will be a ticket to freedom. But Yosef is let down. Verse 23, it says that the chamberlain of the cupbearers did not remember Yosef, but he forgot him. And Rashi comments on the redundant language. It says that he didn't remember him and he forgot him. So why does it repeat that? So Rashi says, he didn't remember him in the short term and then forgot him in the long term. Meaning it wasn't just, he totally forgot about him. The minute he got out of jail, he forgot about him. Now why is that? Meaning, what was this butler so unimpressed with Yosef? He forgot about the whole experience. You would think this is pretty amazing. I was in jail. I was concerned for my life. I was there with this Hebrew. I had this dream. He interpreted it 100% right. You think it made an impression on the butler. But yet the butler just totally forgets about it, like 100%. Like he has no recollection. What's going on? Was he so like unimpressed or like self-centered? Like why did he forget about it? So it was this very surprising thing, but this is also part of the Ashkacha. This is divine providence. And the rabbis tell us that this actually was due to Yosef's sin. Yosef did something inappropriate over here. And that's why Yosef was stuck languishing for 2 more years in the dungeon. So what did he do wrong? So the Medrash says a very interesting thing. The Medrash quotes the verse in Tehillim. It says, Ashrei Gever Asher Sam Hashem Miftacho. Praised is the man that puts his trust in Hashem, V'lo panel rahavim, and does not turn towards nobles. So the verse tells us they should trust in Hashem and not in nobles, not in royalty, not in politicians. So the Medrash says, well, who's the one who trusts in Hashem? It's Yosef. Yosef is known as one who trusts in Hashem. And then it says, who's the one who turned towards the politicians? It was Yosef. He turned towards politicians because he turned towards the royal cupbearer. So the Medrash itself is a very funny statement. It seems to be contradictory. Because on one hand, it says that Yosef is the one who is praised for his trust in God. But then it says, yeah, but Yosef put his trust into royalty. Which one is it? So there's a very important understanding of this. And this actually gives us a big window into the whole idea of bitachon. Now, bitachon is the term we use for trust in God. Meaning, emunah is belief in God. But belief in God can be intellectual. Trust in God means that I'm willing to bring that into my daily actions. So belief in God says, I believe there's a God who provides livelihood, provides parnassah. But yet, trust in God means that when I'm out in the workplace, I understand that the decisions I make are impacting my parnassah because Hashem provides it. So if I cut corners or I cheat, I'm not accomplishing anything because Hashem provides the money. But I would say that the idea of trusting in God is taking your faith in God and putting it to action. So, but the question always is, how much do we say that God provides for us? And how much do we say that we have to put forth our own effort? Meaning I can say, well, I need to put food on the table. So I'm going to work every possible second to be sure I have food. Or you can say, no, you know, God provides and he's going to give what I need. And I could put in minimal efforts and trust that God will provide for me. And there's a big scale, a spectrum, you know, of how much work I put in and how much do I trust in God to provide for me. So for instance, the Gemara tells us about Rav Shimon bar Yochai, who went into a cave for I think it was for how many years, 12 years, and with no food and no drink. And God gave him a carob tree and a well of water, and he survived in the cave with nothing else for 12 years with his son. So he was totally trusting in God, put forth no human effort, and he did just fine. Most of us, if we went into a cave and closed the door, would probably starve to death. But God provides. So where's that balance? Somebody can say, I have to work in the office 16 hours a day, because if not, how can I guarantee I'm going to be able to feed my family? Or you can say, well, if I put in an 8-hour workday, even though my salary may not be tremendous, but I can trust Hashem will be sure I have what I need to survive. I mean, there's a lot of approaches to this. So let's look at Yosef for a moment. Yosef is praised as the one who trusts in God, but then he is also blamed for trusting in royalty. So the question is, which one is it? Does he trust in God or in royalty? So most of us know the famous joke, but I'll tell it again to make a point. There was the guy who was in his house next to a river, and the river begins to overflow and flood the house. So he goes up to the second story, and you know he's all worried about drowning in his house, and looks out his window, and the water is so high, a canoe comes by. And they say, come on in, we'll save you. He says, no, God's going to save me. So the water keeps rising. He goes up to the roof. A boat comes by. Come on in. We're going to save you. And he says, no, God's going to save me. The water is up to his neck. He's about to drown. Helicopter comes by. Grab onto the rope. We're going to pull you in. He says, no, God's going to save me. Eventually, he drowns. He goes up to heaven. And he says, God, why didn't you save me? I put so much faith into you. He says, what do you mean? I sent you a canoe. I sent you a boat. And I sent you a helicopter. What do you want from me? So, famous joke, old joke, I'm sure many of you heard it before. But the point is such an important point. Usually, when we say that God is going to help us, now we can't expect seas to split. We don't expect man to fall from the sky. We expect, within our daily lives, God's going to set things up to help us out. That's what we look at as hashkacha. And for most of us, if we were to be in a situation where Paro's chief butler was with us in jail, and he goes free, and I did a favor for him, I helped him out, we would say, amazing, God just sent me a messenger to save me. And we would say, this is a gift from God. And Yosef also probably, you would think, would see this as a gift from God. Yosef seemingly saw this chief butler as Hashem sending him a messenger to save him. So what did Yosef do wrong? So the answer is, for most of us, it was correct to trust in the butler. Meaning most of us should see that butler as a messenger of God, and trusting him was correct. However, if you're on a level of Yosef, the way that this spectrum, this this scale of how much do you put forth human effort and how much you trust in God, the way they interact is based on your level. Meaning when you're on a typical everyday level of most of us, so then we understand that we have to put forth our own efforts, and God within our efforts will help us succeed. So you're in jail, you see the chief butler. If you are not to say anything to him, then you're being foolish, you're being negligent. God sent you a gift. He put Pharaoh's royal servant with you in jail. Speak to him, ask him for a favor. And if you didn't, then we would blame you for not putting forth natural efforts. However, when you're on a level of Yosef, when you're living with God on a much higher plane, so then stooping down to talk to a human being is going beneath your level. And it's a very fine point. But the way that it works is that as you grow and you're at trust and connection to God, we expect less out of you in the realm of human action. And a person who is on a low level of human action has to put forth more effort because God's not going to work with them as closely. So God says, you know, Yosef, you're on the level of Baruch HaGever, blessed, praises the man, Ashrei Gever, Asher Sama Hashem Tachlo, that places his trust in God. That's your level. So if you were to turn towards any human being, that is itself a lacking in trust in me, because you know better than that. You know that I don't need a butler, and I don't need a baker, and I don't need a boat, and I don't need a helicopter. You know that I can do it myself. And my relationship with you, Yosef, is that I do help you directly. But for a regular person, that was the right thing to do. In other words, you have to live within your own personal understanding of where you are in relationship with God. So to do something, you're in prison, and you ignore the butler, you say, God's going to help me, what you're doing could be foolish. It could be itself an act of negligence, because God is giving you a gift. Why are you ignoring it? But if you're Yosef, the answer has to be, I'm on such a high level, I know God's going to save me. And if I make requests of human beings, I'm actually lowering my trust in God. So it's actually a balance we have to strike. But it's an insight into how this whole balance of, we call it hishtalus and bitachon, human effort versus trust in God, where the two meet. And the answer is, well, it depends. It depends on you. The more you grow in trust in God, the less effort's required, and the more God helps you. The less you trust in God, the more effort you need to put forth, and the less God helps you. And the higher you go, the less you need of human effort. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai went into a cave with full trust in God, so God fully took care of him. The Jews in the desert, they put their full faith in God, and God took care of them. He gave them money, he gave them a well of water. Yosef in jail, he was somebody who had full trust in God, but putting in this word to the butler for him was a breach of that trust. And for him, that was not acceptable. So the Torah says the butler forgot about him. That was Hashem's decree. The butler should forget. And we're going to see next week that Yosef had to spend 2 more years in jail because of this. Okay. Any questions? Everyone should have a great week.
Thank you.
Thank you.